I could spend just one more minute with you before you have to go. If I could see you one more time before you have to leave this world. If I could hold you in my arms tonight, just like we used to do. I could leave this world a happy girl, forever loving you.
I want to welcome you to this very special episode of the Hallie Kasser Jane Show. This is the first of a two-part series on Alzheimer's disease. Alzheimer's disease is a form of dementia, the sixth leading cause of death in the United States, in which more than 5 million people are living with the disease. More startling is this. Every 66 seconds, someone in the United States gets the disease. There are no cures, although there are some gains. Alzheimer's disease, nevertheless, is an equal opportunity destroyer. It affects not only its victims, but their families and all whom they love. Over the next weeks, we will explore some of those families and their heart-wrenching stories as they struggle to cope with both the physical and emotional ravages of the disease, not just of the victims, but of the families. We will take a look at families who were torn apart and families who came together under the weight of the diagnosis and all that it brings. We will explore legislative solutions as well as offer ways through. My guests today are the two oldest children of country music superstar and Alzheimer's victim Glenn Campbell and country superstar Tanya Tucker. Next week, we'll talk with Tennessee State Senator Rusty Crowe, Peter Falk's daughter Catherine, founder of the Catherine Falk Foundation, and Patty Davis, daughter of Alzheimer's victim President Ronald Reagan. We want to thank Tanya Tucker and Rusty Crowe for allowing us the use of their song, Forever Loving You, throughout this broadcast. This is the story of Alzheimer's disease, a debilitating illness that attacks the minds of too many. But Alzheimer's disease attacks more than its patients. As you are about to learn, Alzheimer's disease attacks the entire family. None of us knows how we will respond to a terminal illness wrought upon the ones we love until it happens to us. We all react to bad news differently. Some cry. Some bury their heads in the sand. Others jump into fighting mode. Many retreat, unable to cope with the slow loss of a loved one. Siblings join together, as you will soon see, and sadly, siblings also fight. Anger rules the day. But in too many families in the modern era, when multiple marriages result in multiple children, a new problem has surfaced. Too many children find themselves at the mercy of step-parents who, for one reason or another, be it power, money, control, spite, insecurity, or jealousies, deny the offspring of a spouse's earlier union access to their loved ones in their dying days. What becomes a step-parent? Why would a step-parent impede a child's right to see their ailing parent, talk about that parent with friends and loved ones, with family, with whomever? To speak with friends and loved ones about one's parents in the throes of the long goodbye, as Nancy Reagan so aptly coined the phrase for Alzheimer's that had struck her husband, President Reagan, is a healthy and normal part of one's coping with one's grief and coming to terms with the excruciatingly slow departure of a parent stricken with Alzheimer's disease. This story is the story of the children of celebrities, up against the power and vast financial resources of current spouses of celebrities protecting their domains, including their own children, against a past they'd rather sweep under a rug. It is the story of the Glenn Campbell family, the Peter Falk family, as well as that of the stories of friends and loved ones witness to some of the family dramas. We talked to a state senator, Rusty Crowe, who worked tirelessly to enact reform, along with Catherine Falk, the founder of the Catherine Falk Organization, advocating human rights legislation because the rights of children, no matter what their age, must be protected. There are many commonalities in the stories you will hear, but the glaring one in each personal story is this: abject anguish. Still, make no mistake, what has happened to celebrity families are not only the story of prominent families. Make no mistake, the Campbell story, the Falk story, are just like your story. Because while celebrity brings the cameras to a tale, in homes and cities, towns and villages all over America, what is happening to the children of celebrities is also happening to those unknown. Divorce is more common than rare these days, and children from earlier marriages more abundant. The law, up until now, failing to address the reality of our times. And so we begin first with the Glen Campbell story. Glen Campbell is an American icon, the rock and country music singer, guitarist, songwriter, television host, an occasional actor, is best known for a series of hits that include By the Time I Get to Phoenix, Rhinestone Cowboy, Gentle on My Mind, Southern Nights, Wichita Lineman, and Galveston. His hit music and comedy variety show called the Glen Campbell Good Time Hour on CBS television was groundbreaking fare. In his 50 years in show business, Campbell has released more than 70 albums, has sold 45 million records, and accumulated 12 gold albums, 4 platinum albums, and 1 double platinum album. He's placed a total of 80 different songs on either the Billboard Country Chart, Billboard Hot 100, or the Adult Contemporary Chart, of which 29 made the top 10, and of which 9 reached number 1 on at least one of those charts. Mr. Campbell made history in 1967 by winning 4 Grammys in the country and pop categories, and was awarded the Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award in 2012. A studio musician for Frank Sinatra, Campbell branched out to film, where he played alongside John Wayne in the film True Grit, which gave Campbell a Golden Globe nomination for Most Promising Newcomer. He also sang the title song, which was nominated for an Academy Award. And then, proving that Alzheimer's disease is an equal opportunity destroyer, in June 2011, Campbell announced he had been diagnosed 6 months earlier. According to his family, symptoms of the disease had been occurring for years, becoming more and more evident as time moved on. His travails became the subject of a film based on his final goodbye tour. Married 4 times, the father of 8 children, he has been married to former Radio City Music Hall Rockette Kimberly Kim Woolen since 1982. Kim is mother of his 3 youngest children. Kim's relationship with Campbell's oldest daughter Debbie and his oldest son Travis has been the subject of tabloid fodder. Debbie and Travis have been engaged in a fight with their stepmother since soon after their father's diagnosis, and thereafter felt forced to file a petition with the courts. In their petition, they alleged that Kim Campbell was keeping their dad, quote, secluded from the rest of the family, end quote, and prohibiting the family, quote, from participating in his care and or treatment, end quote. That petition resulted in a mediation hearing agreed upon by all parties for expedience sake and the signing of an agreement between the parties in which Debbie and Travis might have been pressured into signing an accord that was hardly to their advantage, an agreement signed against the threat of never being able to see their father alive again. The petition mediation settlement limited both children's rights to visit their father more than 2 times per month and insisted on 7 days advance notice to their stepmother, Kimberly Campbell, the visits to last no more than 4 hours. The door to their father's room must remain open and a caregiver in attendance at all times. No purses, cameras, phones, or recording devices are allowed in the room. Fair? You decide, as we now play for you the never-before-heard audio from the mediation obtained exclusively by the Hallie Kasser-Jane Show.
That's my concern. And my concern is that if this gets pushed 6-12 months down the road and you guys go without seeing your dad and then he dies, I'm just trying to be sympathetic to the situation. And, you know, I could sit here and be totally detached and say, we recognize it for what it is that mm-hmm. it's telling you she's trying to have control.
Yep.
But the fact is that she does have control right now. She does. So, you have to figure out what's more important for you to stand up and say, nope, I'm not going to accept that because I don't think it's right or fair. Or say, I'll do whatever it takes to be able to see my dad.
We begin with Travis Campbell, Glenn's oldest son.
All right, Travis, thank you so much for being here and for sharing your story with us. Just to clarify, you are your father's first son born to his second marriage, yes?
Correct.
All right. So when was the last time that you saw your dad? And tell us, everybody wants to know, how's he doing?
He's doing really good. It was probably about 3 weeks ago when I was in Nashville. And he's doing very well. I mean, as good as can be expected.
Right. Do they have this at a certain stage in the Alzheimer's spectrum?
Well, they're saying he's in the later stages, but my sister and I think he's doing a lot better than what my stepmom portrays him as being. I mean, when we were there, you know, he'd be sitting there and we'd be, you know, visiting, and all of a sudden, boom, something would click. I mean, he'd look at me and just say, "I sure love you, son," you know, and I mean, those are the memories that kind of, you know, that are worth, you know, worth it all right there.
Oh, I believe that's true. Listen, your father had a heck of a career. He was on the road a lot, married 4 times, fathered 8 children. Growing up, what was your relationship with him?
Really good. I mean, as a kid, I didn't appreciate it till I became an adult, but I mean, all the people that would come over, I mean, with regards to, you know, well, John Wayne when they were doing True Grit, but I mean, music-wise, you know, like Merle Haggard, Mel Tillis, Buck Owens. I mean, I didn't realize, you know, as a child, you know, what, you know, celebrity royalty, you know, I was there with, you know, and lo and behold, you know, my dad ended up becoming celebrity royalty, I mean, with regard to country music.
Absolutely.
You know, but it was really neat, you know. I mean, as long as I didn't bug him too much, he'd let me hang around and, you know, visit with everybody. He tried to get me into golf at an early age, which I wish I would have pursued. But, I mean, I was, you know, golf was for wimps. I played baseball, you know.
My kind of guy. I'm a baseball kind of girl.
Yeah, I was an old man. It was an old man sport, you know what I mean? But, boy, later on, like in college when I started taking up golf, I wish I had started at an earlier age.
But they got divorced. How old were you when your parents divorced?
Gosh, they were married 18 years. I was, like, around 7, 8, something like that. Yeah, and then after they split, he, you know, he moved out of the house that they built in Los Angeles. I grew up in Los Angeles.
Okay. You live in Wichita, but after they divorced, so you didn't see him quite as much as you had when he was
No, not as much. But I went out on the road with him a lot. When he would play in Vegas, I was very, very fortunate. I mean, people ask me if I get starstruck. I'm like, not really, but even, you know, even as a young kid, I did realize who Elvis Presley was, and he would play at the Hilton in Vegas. He would either play, you know, after Elvis's stint or before, and Elvis would play, you know, after him. There'd be overlapping times, and that was really neat. I'll never forget that, meeting Elvis.
You were one fortunate kid, I got to tell you. What a life, what a life. You were a drummer, right? I don't know you drum anymore,
uh-huh.
but that was your,
yeah,
that was your
drum.
Musical talent.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. And mm-hmm. So you've made your living doing...
Well, basically, in college, I majored in French literature and political science, and I ended up doing accounting after I graduated college. And I produced my wife, who's a singer,
right?
Trudy Andes Campbell now. And yeah, I was very, very fortunate. I went to school in Switzerland as a kid, right outside of Lausanne, so I speak French fluently.
Au revoir.
I thought it'd be a skate in you know, in college, but it really wasn't. I mean, French literature was pretty brutal.
So you really
but
did
I,
have.
I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, you've had a pretty great life up until now, and hopefully you'll continue. But listen to what I want to ask you. So.
Sure.
We were talking about Alzheimer's today, and I want to ask you when you first noticed something wasn't right with your dad.
Well, it was probably, a couple years before they started the All Be Me tour. When we would be playing golf, you know, he'd tell the same joke, you know, during a round of golf, you know, and I just, you know, kind of, we used to blow it off as to, oh, you know, he's just forgetting, you know, but, you know, as it progressed, definitely became clearer. Something was up.
So when someone you love, when you start to notice something like that, what's the thing? You keep it to yourself? You mention it to somebody else? What did you do?
Yeah, they had him, you know, tested, and you know, as it turned out, he did have Alzheimer's, which was kind of a real blow. But
do you remember when you were told
you know,
had Alzheimer's?
Honestly, I don't.
Right.
I don't. I mean, I just kind of just always, I mean, for a year or so, kind of suspected something was up. And then after it was tested, I really wasn't shocked, but, you know, I was more sad than anything.
Right. Did you discuss it with him?
Well, he understood more or less, you know, what he had or, you know, I mean, he used to make a joke on stage that he had part-timers, you know, which, yeah, when he would forget stuff. But it was, you know, he's still very, very jovial. I mean, he's an incredibly jovial person, huge heart, great heart, you know, and it's kind of surreal. I mean, here I am watching the second round, or actually the first round now of the U.S. Open, and that's something that when I was with him, we used to watch a lot. And then if I wasn't with him, you know, I'd always call him on Sunday, which was Father's Day, because that's the final round of the U.S. Open. But yeah, I mean, it's sad, but But I thoroughly enjoy our visits when we go down there.
So listen, eventually his current wife of 34 years, Kim, and mother of three of the siblings, decided that when the public started to notice symptoms, she would make your father's battle with Alzheimer's public. I think I read, and tell me if I'm wrong, that she felt to do so would squash any rumors that he was drinking or back on cocaine, which had been part of his life early on in his very storied career. Were you okay with making his diagnosis public?
Yeah, but the way she did it, I kind of had a problem with it. I mean, the All Be Me documentary that was out a little while back.
Right.
What Kim ended up doing, Kim's my stepmom, what she ended up doing is she ended up firing my sister Debbie and his old band, who had been with him for close to 30 years, over 25 years, and put him out on the road, and it was only supposed to be 12 to 15 dates. It ended up being 155 dates over a 2.5-year stretch. And the climax of the documentary is when he broke down on stage. And I thought that, I didn't think that was right, personally. I mean, I didn't know if it was like, I called it the Last Dash for Cash Money tour for Kim. You know, if he's going to be on stage and doing that, he needs the most familiarity possible,
right?
You know, with his old band and everything, you know, as a constant. But to change everything up and to stick him out there, I didn't think it was all that, you know, I didn't think it benefited Dad. I mean, I'd have preferred him spending his last few cognizant years of his life, you know, playing golf with his buddies.
Right,
you know?
Right. But question about
you know,
this.
What?
Go ahead.
Sure, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, even when my sister Debbie went to some of the final shows, they wouldn't even let her backstage, you know, to see Dad, which I thought was pretty bad. Then right after the All Be Me tour finished, she ended up sticking him in a nursing home. And then she went out on doing speeches for the documentary, you know, getting public, you know, paid appearances and all that kind of thing. But I don't know. And then on top of that, we found out that my dad was placed in a nursing home through the media, which kind of rubbed us the wrong way. But you know, that's neither here nor there. I mean, the most important part now is just to concentrate on loving Dad and spending as much time with him as we can.
What was your relationship with Kim prior to all of this? Did she?
Her and I never really got along. I mean, when Dad was cognizant, I mean, I told Dad that I would respect her as his wife as long as she respected me as his son. Whenever things would get tense, he'd nip it in the bud. But now that he's not really cognizant, she's kind of taken like a power grab, which, you know, I don't mean to feel bitter about it, but I just feel that she thinks, you know, she put in her 30 years and now it's her time, you know.
They have three children together. I think that sort of has a lot to do with some of the schism that's between the families. And it's not unusual, by the way, whether you're a celebrity family or a regular family. You know, a lot of this kind of stuff goes on all the time. When she made the decision to put him in the long-term care facility, now, her argument is, and I read this in Rolling Stone, so I would have to confirm it with her, but she said it was the doctors who made the decisions. Have you ever spoken to his doctors?
Actually, no. I can't speak with his doctors.
Okay. But when you asked her why this decision to put him in long-term facility, her answer to you was?
She was basically saying it was for his own protection. I mean, but honestly, in my opinion, you know, I mean, there's so many families out there, you know, that let him stay in his home. I mean, hey, where he is, it's a nice place. But, I mean, it's just, I don't know. It's just hard, you know, when I leave the facility, you know, and.
Yeah, watching anybody institutionalized is an absolute nightmare. Is that when she began to start to play with access to your dad, when she put him in the facility?
Correct.
Okay. And what was that? What is that? She said, what's the deal? Her deal was you guys were not allowed to go see him unless you called her first and made arrangements. And what was this?
Exactly. Exactly. We're allowed to see him twice a month for 4 hours at a time. That's it.
Is that now before you went to court, which we're going to talk about in a second, or was that before?
Well, she's trying to make it so that it was a mediated settlement agreement. And she's trying to make it so that supersedes the law that was passed down there.
Right. Let's talk about the Campbell-Falk law in Tennessee, which allows you the same access as anybody else as long as you're a part of the family. We're going to talk to Senator Crow in another segment. But I don't understand that. I simply don't understand why she would keep her husband's children from being able to see their father whenever they want. What's her
honestly,
answer?
Honestly, I don't know. And again, I don't mean to, you know, be negative, but I mean, in my opinion, it's just a power grab. You know, I mean, my sister Debbie is older than Kim, and she's only a few years older than I am, and my sister. Honestly, I don't know. I really don't get it. I mean, she claims to be a Christian and everything, but sometimes it just boggles my mind.
I think you get it. Tell me you don't get it.
Yeah,
you get it.
I get it, but I mean, it's something that I kind of wouldn't want to say in public. I mean, I don't want to seem like, you know, like a, you know, I don't know. It's just rough.
It's only
more I dwell on it, it kind of tears me up.
Oh, my God. Of course it tears you up. And there are eight kids. She has three of them. Is it only you and Debbie who are being denied, or do the other five kids also having a problem?
Pretty much. I mean, Kelly, my sister from my mom, I mean, starting to have problems with her now. But, I mean, she's just, you know, she's like playing this, you know, loving caretaker and goes around on paid speeches and stuff like that, wherein, you know, if everyone knew the truth, they would see a very different side of her, in my opinion.
So we mentioned that you guys did bring a petition against her at one point, you and Debbie. I should be very specific about that, with the assertion that Kim had secluded him, meaning your dad, and prevented you from both participating in your dad's medical care. And I also think it claimed that Kim isn't providing him with toiletries and clothing, and while possibly mishandling finances. So that's it in a nutshell. That's what's going on here, in your opinion.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. So, you know, this diagnosis of Alzheimer's or any disease that's going to ultimately take your loved ones from you, I just went through it with my mom and my family, believe me. Right?
I'm sorry about that.
My nightmare. It's a nightmare. It's just,
yeah.
I don't know, something happens to families. But it's odd to me that when a family should be coming together, they often crack apart,
yeah.
Right? What do you
sure.
have thoughts on this? Do you think it's an emotional reaction and some people just handle it their way and other people handle it a different way? And
I guess. I mean, I you know, again, I feel my mom passed away in 93 from breast cancer. And I just, you know, I just know that she was around here. She had nipped us in the bud a long time ago. I mean, there's no way she would have allowed something like this to happen.
But with you, God bless you, because I read your story, Travis. You have been through the mill. This thing has affected you emotionally and physically. Give
sure.
me a break. You had a heart attack. You had a stroke.
Yeah, I had a heart attack and a stroke. I was in a coma for about a week and a half. I had no brain activity. I mean, thank God for my wife. I mean, they were telling her that since I didn't have any brain activity and I wasn't coming out of the coma, you know, that they should pull the plug on me. And she hung in there with me. And obviously, Jesus has something more for me to do here because I'm still here. And I mean, it's kind of amazing because when I was in the coma, I mean, a lot of people ask, you know, if I saw a white light or anything like that. And I didn't see a white light or anything like that. I mean, I try to remember, you know, what it was like. But one thing I remember feeling is I remember feeling enveloped in love. I mean, completely enveloped in love. And the nurses said when I came to, you know, they had me tied down so I couldn't fall out of the hospital bed. But they said I was, like, struggling. I was saying, she won't let me stay. And they asked my wife, who is he talking about? And she said, he's probably talking about his mom. And they said, well, where is she? And she told them that, you know, she passed away in 93. You know, and, man, I get chill bumps just recounting that. And it just, it's again, I mean, I'm blessed to be here. And I know there's more for me to do here. You
absolutely.
Know, so every day, just, you know, don't take it for granted, you know. Hug the ones you love, tell them you love them, and live every day to its fullest.
So here's the deal, though. You went through that horrendous experience, and I think that somewhere along the line there's a car accident that wasn't too pretty either, emotionally and physically. All of this obviously affecting you in huge ways. Did the family respond? Did your youngest siblings respond? Did Kim? Is there any way to rectify
honestly,
this?
Honestly, I heard from third parties that were close to Kim and them that they thought it would have been easier if I'd have passed away, which is kind of sad to say. And these people that I heard it from are in that inner circle. You know, it's you know.
It's hard. It's terrible.
It's tough.
It's not a pretty story. And I want to make the point, which we're going to do through this entire show. You know, this happens to be the Glenn Campbell family, and you know, you're kind of public people, so there you go. But your story is, by the way, very similar to other people who none of us know their names, and you know, they might have nothing. And so that's why I think it's so critical that you tell and share what your experience has been in all of this. I so wish there could be a reconciliation with it all. What can I say?
Sure.
But you have done terrific work, you and Catherine Falk and your sister Debbie, with the help of Senator Rusty Crowe, who's going to be on, as I said, in a different segment on this Campbell-Falk bill that was passed in Tennessee. We'll talk to your sister about it when we talk to her. But that's legislation. If your father knew that all of this was going on, what would he be thinking?
Oh, he'd be going nuts. I mean, you know, we always got along great, and it just breaks my heart. You know, I mean, I don't know why she has to, you know, when I say she, I mean, Kim, my stepmom, why she has to try to pull this power trip, you know. I mean, and going back a little bit, like what you're saying, you know, about us being, you know, the Campbell family. I mean, this happens to anybody. I mean, people, you know, used to ask me all the time, they still do, well, what's it like growing up as a Glenn Campbell son? I'm like, well, I mean, sure, I was very fortunate and blessed to have had, you know, a nice education and a certain sense of lifestyle. But I mean, I'm just me. I'm like anybody.
It's, living your life, doing,
you know,
your thing. Yeah,
sure,
right,
exactly.
Right. The emotions
are
in
there. We're like any other family. I mean, obviously, in some aspects we're not. But, I mean, this can happen to anybody. You know, it doesn't matter who you are.
I think that's really important to say, you know, because the blood that courses through your veins ain't any different than the blood that does people who don't have celebrity in their biographies. So I think that's why we should mention that, because I do think it's important.
And then my dad, like, he used to always stress, you know, that the fans came first. You know, I mean, he always told me, and my mom as well, you know, when he was doing shows, I mean, he would stand in line sometimes for over an hour, you know, waiting for everyone to go through the line to, you know, so he could sign the autograph, take a picture. He would always try to personalize it with everybody. You know, he'd always tell me, you know, always, you know, the fans come first. I mean, if it wasn't for them, there wouldn't be a Glenn Campbell. And whereas my mom thought it was a privilege to be Glenn Campbell's wife and who she was, you know, I feel my stepmom feels it's her right. You know what I mean? I mean, that's the difference that I kind of take away from this. But, you know, again, I don't mean to be too negative or too harsh on her. It's just, those are just my feelings.
I think you're just being honest.
Sure.
mean, nothing wrong with stating the facts, right? So listen to me.
Yeah.
You're in a very important role here, because the world will listen to what you have to say. So many families affected by this kind of thing with Alzheimer's, dementia, anything when a loved one is, you know, in the last stages of their life. Talk to me about this. Tell me what you would say to other families who are going through this trauma. What's your advice to them?
Well, with regards to the family conflict or with regards to having a loved one?
I think answer both. I bet you have something to say on both aspects.
With regards to, I mean, it, you know, if you had someone with Alzheimer's, you well know, I mean, right now, he still remembers me. So cherish those moments. When, I mean, whenever those moments happen, I mean, you know, as you know, every now and then, you know, it's like some brain cells will spark. I mean, I'm not sure exactly the medical terms, but
right,
he'll click and boom, you know, he's there. So, oh, Trav, I love you. I mean, he calls me Travo. I mean, he's the only one that calls me Travo. So when I'm there and he says, hey, Travo, I love you, son. I mean, you know, I mean, I know he knows it's me. And, you know, just cherish those times, you know, soak them in. Because I'm sure, you know, as I've been told, you know, those aren't going to last all that much longer. You know, it's a progressive disease and it gets worse. And really not looking forward to the progressive part of it.
Right, I hear you. And then to say to the public who are experiencing something similar to what you have in terms of the emotional aspects and the, you know, arguing and the power plays and the, you know, what do you say there?
Honestly, just go through and take it with a grain of salt, you know, I mean, because in a lot of aspects, there's nothing I can do about it. You know, she's the one in charge, you know, and it kind of sucks, but it's a reality. I mean, you know, try to work through it, but if you can't work through it, I mean, protect your rights.
Protect
you know,
your rights.
I hate to say
yeah.
that, but.
I yeah. think that's important. You know, here's the thing also, the one other thing that I want to say to you, which is this is a family disease. When one person is diagnosed, it's not just them, it's the entire family. I'll say this on, you know, continuing throughout the show. What's been the biggest lesson in all of this for you, Travis?
Just patience, more than anything. You know, patience, and I mean, again, with what happened with my stroke and everything and my heart attack, just patience, and just, you know, every day is just a bonus, you know, and enjoy it. I guess beyond patience, just being able to really appreciate, you know, the times of clarity, you know, that the Alzheimer's patient has.
Right.
Because sure, as it progresses, there won't be all that much clarity left.
Born in 1956, Debbie Campbell is Glenn Campbell's eldest daughter from his first marriage to Diane Kirk. For the last 24 years, Debbie has been by her father's side as a part of his concert touring act, as well as a supportive part of his family. She's been with her dad through much of his storied career, his four wives, through drug and alcohol addiction, and now through the shattering diagnosis and stages of Alzheimer's disease. In her frank memoir, Life with My Father, Glenn Campbell, Debbie told the story of her father straight from the heart. Today, she speaks in depth as to the harsh realities an Alzheimer's diagnosis inflicts on an entire family. Listen to me. I perceive having researched this just horrendous story. Just up until your father's Alzheimer's diagnosis, your father was your everything. And then the diagnosis. And life as you knew it changed forever. Can you remember when you learned about this diagnosis and your thoughts? I know it kind of came on slowly. Maybe at some point you had an aha moment. I think my dad's, you know, memory's gone. Talk
right.
to
Well, yeah. You know, I mean, Kim and I had taken Dad here in Phoenix to the Mayo Clinic before he even got that diagnosis in L.A., or the guy that on the documentary, that was, you know, he'd already been diagnosed before that guy got to him. But, and it, I guess I was probably in denial too, you know, a little bit, because I know Dad, Dad didn't concern himself with knowing what the temperature was outside, what day of the week it was, he just didn't concern himself with that because he's just out either playing golf or he's singing. He doesn't concern himself with all that. So when we're sitting in there in the doctor's office and the doctor's saying, okay, I'm going to give you three things to remember. And he says these things and then they come back to it. You know, Dad says, why do I need to know that? You know, but that was the telltale signs that he definitely was having memory issues. But that was like a year before, I think. Like 2010, maybe.
How scary
can't
for you,
the
though.
Exact.
It was. Yeah.
It was scary for all of us, yeah. When he got the diagnosis, then it's like a game changer, you know, for all the way around. Kim, you know, stepped in a lot more because she never really traveled with us ever. Very rare. It was very rare if Kim was on the road with Dad and I. And, I was with him from 1987 till 2011. And as his memory waned, he got more anxious. I guess. I don't know if that's as you get older, you get anxious as you're aging and you don't like it. And so it makes you have anxiety. I who knows? You know, I mean, everybody's different, I'm sure. But Kim started coming out with us more. And then with the Alzheimer's diagnosis, she decided that she wanted her kids out on the road. So she let go of Dad's band of 20 something years. And eventually I knew I was probably not far behind because now, you know, she wanted her kids to be on the road with Dad. And that was fine because he wanted Kim around a lot more at that point.
Let me say up front that your father had four marriages. Kim was the last. They've been married for 30 something years. Three children.
But keep in mind that I was on the road with them for 25 of
those exactly,
years.
Exactly.
He was never home. So.
That's so utterly important. Yeah. And the other side of the point is that people need to understand just how much of a part of your dad's life as his first daughter you were.
Right. I was everything on the road to him other than his wife, you know.
And also
we
the most
meals
talented.
Together, we golfed
yes.
together. We went everywhere together. We went movies together. We did everything together.
And sang together because, guys, if you have not
yes.
heard Debbie sing, she's
oh,
a chip
so
off
Listen
the old father's block. Oh, my gosh. Debbie, you also wrote a book, Life with My Father, Glenn
I
Campbell.
Did.
Phenomenal
yeah.
piece of writing. You guys did a great job on this story.
Oh, you're so sweet.
I am
wanted
sweet,
to call
but...
it Burning Bridges. but only because that was the very first song I ever sang on stage with Dad.
Right, right. Right.
With
but
Burning Bridges.
Exactly.
But the irony
of it all, my friend, right? The irony
yeah.
of it all.
They mixed it all. Yeah.
So I think we've established that you guys had a remarkable relationship, you and your dad, forever.
We were best friends. Yeah,
and
we were pretty much best friends.
And
that's
pretty powerful stuff as we get into exactly what went down with this wacky family story. I'm saying this to you, and people will hear this throughout this entire show, but I'm saying it to you because I haven't had a chance to say it to you off air, which is, you know what, kiddo? This is a story that whether your father's name was Glenn Campbell or Glenn Susan, whatever, you know, this happens to all sorts of families.
Oh, I know. And, I've heard it so many times.
Right.
So many from so many people before it happened to me.
And the power of...
God, how in the world
right.
can people be like that? And then all of a sudden, now I'm right in the middle of the same thing.
All right.
Exact same thing that I heard so much about.
So...
It's crazy.
So I think it's important to put that in, and I'm using you, as I told everybody else of the celebrity parent. I'm using you guys because we can get the story out to all the people out there who also have gone through this kind of nightmare, because without your voice, I don't think that we can get the message. There are solutions to the problem to some degree, as we're about to learn.
Right.
So
yeah.
Here we go. She takes away your job. You're fired from the job that you had
right.
had for all those many years. What
Even though I never thought of it as a job.
Right, of course not. Yeah. But what was your relationship with Kim all those years? Kim being
We were okay.
Stepmother.
I mean, we were okay. I kept my mouth shut. I bit my tongue a lot. You know, that was my dad's wife. There was things I didn't like. There was things I saw over the years that I had a problem with. But I kept my mouth shut because I could tell my dad, talk to him about it. Yeah. He could probably get in a huge fight with her about it. Yeah. But in the end, who's going to win? I'm not, because that's his wife. So I just kept my mouth shut.
So here's a story that comes up in all of this, too. So when he is diagnosed and he is a public figure and he is playing music, and thank God he could play music for quite some time, the decision to keep him going on the road, were you okay with that at that time?
Not as, I mean, we weren't doing a lot at that point. You know, I mean, we were still out there, but we weren't touring a lot. Then you get a diagnosis of Alzheimer's, boom, shows are coming in, they're selling out. So that was a moneymaker for them, you know.
Gotcha.
I think Dad was definitely worked too hard. He was worked until he couldn't do it anymore. And if he wouldn't have fallen apart at that show in Napa Valley, he still would have been out there doing it right now. I have no doubt. My 100% no doubt that they would still have him out there doing that.
That's scary.
Yeah.
So,
and I know that he did not want to be out there. I know that.
Really? Because that's something
I mean, he was fighting them every inch of the way. Yes. And I have that from very good sources that they were, you know, he was fighting them every inch of the way.
So what you're talking to about here, in a way, is if he really didn't want to do this, and at that point, his strength is probably, you know, diminishing. In a way,
right?
For lack of, let's call it what it is. That elder abuse? Forcing somebody to do something?
Of course it is. Absolutely. Oh, my gosh. Absolutely. I remember I called the house one day, and I remember they were going to go to Australia. They were supposed to be doing a show with Kenny Rogers over in Australia. And I called up to the house to talk to my dad, and I won't say who was answering the phone, but they go, well, your dad finally put his foot down. I go, what do you mean? He goes, he told them he is absolutely, forget about it, not going to Australia, not doing it. You're not getting me on an airplane. I'm not going to Australia. And so they had to cancel it. And they, of course, said the doctors, you know, they came out with a story that the doctors had advised that it wouldn't have been good for Glenn to travel all that way with his Alzheimer's to do a show. But Dad told them flat out, I am not going.
So
ain't happening.
Did you go to Kim about this and say, Kim, what are you doing?
Oh, no, I wasn't talking to her after. I had already been gone.
Okay.
I had already been fired. I've maybe had 3 conversations with Kim since 2011.
So... You're aware of the fact that you're aware of the fact that your father doesn't
want
to do this, in a way he's being forced to do it. And then
she went one step further.
And she put together, I mean, she had him all CBS did a piece on him.
Of course,
60
absolutely.
Minutes did a piece. I mean, she was just running him around all over the place. And you don't think that
absolutely.
Was something he really was all that thrilled about doing?
Oh, no. Heck no. Heck no.
Okay.
No.
So,
but in the meantime, there was an ulterior motive, too.
But go for it.
Because every time he's out there doing something, the band is with him, and the band is her kids,
right.
And she's trying to get them a career.
Right.
So, you know, the stepping stone, the means of the end, you know.
So the thing about this that makes me crazy is so many people probably had been, besides you, had been around him, who had been around him for years and years and years and years and years, right?
Right.
And they're also under her power. Powerful lady, this Kim.
Well, you know. I wouldn't. I'm not going to call it what it is. If you want to call it power, you can. I'll just keep my words in my throat.
Well, it is a power play in a way. The other thing is, okay, it gets to a point, and this is, you know, an onset disease, and it's a stage disease that she put your dad in a long-term care facility in Nashville, right?
Exactly. In a place that Dad never wanted to be ever in Nashville. Ever hated Nashville. Didn't like the politics, everything that Nashville stood for. You know, they did him wrong at some point, and he just walked away and just, you know, and now he's going to live out the rest of his days in Nashville.
And you also wanted to bring him home, right? You were willing to take care of
him. Oh, I would have brought him home, and I would have done any move to heaven and earth to have him here at home. Dad does very well with me. I'm so attuned with his needs because I was on the road with him for all those years.
Right.
So I pretty much know what he's thinking before he even says it. When I go to the home, I'm the one that's clipping his nails, asking for scissors to clip his eyebrows for the hairs are too long. You know, I mean, I've been doing this for the last 3 months, 4 months. Every other month I'm doing his nails.
Debbie, he is in a long-term care facility. I assume there's plenty of money.
But you know what? He won't let anybody do it.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
You know, and
not even Kim?
I guess. I can't say he won't let anybody do it. All I know is when I go and I see them and he's biting them, I ask for tools to cut them. And shape them and file them, you know.
And he's aware of you. He is aware of you.
Oh, yeah. And one of the caregivers said to me recently, I think it was about a month ago, she said he really knows you because he's very calm with me. And he just sits there and lets me do it. I cut him last week. 2 weeks ago I was there. I just saw him this Saturday, too. But 2 weeks I was there, and I was clipping him, and I had the little stick to clean underneath. And he looks at me and he goes, I'll show you how to do it, honey. And he took it from me. He doesn't talk a lot, but when he does, it comes right out and it's clear as bell, you know, and he knows exactly what he's talking about. And he took the little stick and started cleaning under his nails. And that's what I want. That's what I want for my dad. I want to engage him, you know.
At what point did Kim say, I don't want you going to see him? And what was her reason? or slowing your visits down or whatever it was? What did she do? What happened here? How do we wind up in court?
Well, first of all, I didn't even know where he was. I found out that he was in a home through social media. And so immediately I had friends who are also fans. I've become very close with a lot of Dad's fans because they've been in his life forever. I mean, I grew up with some of them at the teen club at the Hilton, you know, because their mom was following Dad and they were too young to be out in the Hilton. So they put him in the teen club and that's where I was. And so we became friends, you know, just forever. They're like family, you know. And Dad even thought of them as that. I mean, if he was doing a show and they weren't there, after the show, he'd go, well, do you know where so-and-so was? Why weren't they at the show tonight? Because he was so used to them being at his shows. You know, they'd come into Branson and sit for 2 weeks at a time every day, every night at the show, front row. You know, these are diehard fans that love my dad so much.
So you
but
find
they called
out.
And said, hey, Deb,
right.
The All Be Me documentary is showing in Asheville. And you want to come? I'll get you a ticket. So I said, okay, I'll come. I didn't care about seeing the documentary. I wanted to know where my dad was. And so I flew there. And so I went to the documentary. I walked out of it. They lost me at, well, then you met me. Have you seen the documentary?
Yeah, years ago. That when it first aired. I haven't seen it in a long time.
Well, when I saw it, they didn't even have Sarah in it. Went from my mom. It didn't even mention my mom. It just showed me and Dad. And then it went to Billy. And then she goes, well, that was Billy, your second wife. And he goes, well, then what happened? And she goes, well, then you met me. And I'm like, are you kidding me? What do you mean, then you met me? Where's Sarah? Dad married Sarah. They have a kid, Dylan. How rude. How disgusting. You're totally wiping out a piece of Dad's life.
Unbelievable. But when did it get to you went to see him in the facility and she had...
Right. The next morning after the documentary. After the documentary, I called Stan. I said, where's my dad? And he hawed around. And I said, I want to see my dad, Stan. Where's my dad? Well, I can't remember the place. I go, Stan, don't give me that. You probably pay the bills for it. So tell me where my dad is. I'm not leaving here without seeing my dad. I go, Stan, we can do it privately or publicly. I'm not leaving until I see my dad. And so he must have called Kim and then they gave me the name of the place. And then that's when I went and saw Dad. And I was with him all day into the evening. And I mean, for hours I was with him. And one of the caregivers said to me, Deb, you don't have to go to a hotel. You can stay here. We have enough rooms in this facility. You can spend the night here. We see that your dad wants you here with him. I mean, Dad would say things like, honey, what room are you in? And I'd say, I'm right next door, Dad. They didn't have adjoining rooms, but I'm right next door because he thought we were on the road. You know, are we doing a show tonight? You know, I mean, he just thought we were in a hotel together. So did I go the next night? Yeah, I went that day. And then I think I stayed and went the next day. And that day, Kim whisked in and said, you need to leave. I have to get him dressed. And then she dressed him up and took him out to the Grammy Museum because that was the opening for his exhibition at the Grammy Music Hall of Fame there in Nashville. They were having a big opening of my dad's stuff and she was whisking him off in a tux to the gala from the facility.
And then after she gave
I went back to a hotel and just cried my eyes out all night.
And then every other attempt that you would make to go see him,
No, it was fine. I could go see him. I would go and see him. I had no restrictions.
Okay.
I wasn't on the visitors list, but they knew that I was able to get in anytime I wanted. And then I started seeing little telltale signs of things that I didn't like at the facility. And I was mad about it. And I would approach Kim on it. I might have run into her like 2 times at the facility. I even ran into Ashley a couple times at the facility. And I would tell Kim my issues and she just ignored them.
Could you give us an example of what an issue?
Well, I can't because some of them have come in play in the court case.
That
is why I brought a court case against her, those issues. And caregivers would tell me things. I mean, I remember do you know who Sarah Darling is?
No. Who's Sarah?
She's a Nashville singer. She's awesome.
Okay.
Wonderful voice. But I fly with her cousin and Joe said, Deb, you want to go to Sarah's wedding with me? I'd love for you to be my plus one. I go, well, absolutely, I'll go. And that'll be great because it's in Nashville and then I'll be able to see Dad. Go to the wedding and spend a couple days there and see Dad every day. And I was there for a week. So I was with Dad every single day for like 4 days in a row, all day long until the wedding day. And then I went to the wedding and then I came back and saw Dad the day after. So I made a comment one day. I said, I bet you guys are going to be glad I won't be here. I have to leave early today because I have a wedding. I bet you'll be glad to see me go. You're probably sick of me. And under somebody's breath, they said, well, at least somebody comes to see him, you know.
Wow.
So that right there was a telltale sign. And just other little things that were going on I wasn't happy about. And they would never tell me what my dad did, what pills he's taking. They would not give me any information whatsoever concerning my dad. And so I was upset with that, among the other things that I had issues with. So that's why I went and got lawyers, and I wanted to be co-conservator. I want conservatorship, or I will be willing to be co-conservator with Kim, because I want to be able to ask somebody a question and then tell me what's going on with my dad.
So if somebody's coming in, let me just interject this. If somebody is coming in right now into the show and hasn't heard some of the other interviews, let me explain to you that there are no rights for children of adults in cases like this. And this is what...
It's horrible.
This is what everybody is trying to fight now, thanks to the Peter Falk law. And now we have a new law, which is the Campbell Falk law that's just been passed, which allows you to have some rights to be able to go see your father.
I hope so, but I have to appeal those from what I'm gathering.
Well, we're gonna get into that.
And we'll get to that. Yeah.
We'll get that into that in a second. But the bottom line was that although she would allow you to see him, she didn't limit...
No, I was never limited. I just had to let them know when I was coming. But because I did the lawsuit, because I initiated a lawsuit, because I was tired of the things happening that were happening for my dad, I was there for my dad, and this is about my dad. And I did not like what I was seeing and witnessing and hearing. So I was going to do something about it, because that was not okay. And because I initiated the lawsuit, then I was cut off. I couldn't see my dad at all.
So she did do that.
You're done?
Yeah.
Yes, she did that.
Okay.
The judge got a guardian ad litem, and they went in and listened to everybody's story. Well, without going further into the lawsuit or anything, of course, you're going to have somebody that's going to go in as an advocate for my dad or whoever else is in the facility, and they're going to talk to certain people. Well, they're not going to talk to the people that are really taking care of the people. They're going to talk to the administrator or the person that owns the facility. You know what I'm talking about?
Right, the big guys
people
who have a lot to protect.
People that have an interest.
Right,
in that person remaining in that home.
Right. I hear
they don't
you.
Want that person going anywhere, so they're going to make sure that you hear all the right things.
She did say, Kim, that the reason he was in that facility was that was doctor recommendation, correct? That's part of her argument. Here's what your stepsister Ashley was quoted as saying in Rolling Stone just this May. No family member, and this is a quote, has ever been denied a visit to my dad. Sometimes we have restrictions as far as for his privacy and safety, like restricting photos taken or items brought in, but no family member has ever been denied. We have some family members who don't understand the disease and what he's going through and like to make a fuss. What they don't know is what they're doing is a disservice to their dad and to people with Alzheimer's everywhere and their families dealing with it. What I will say to any negativity that's been spread out there by whomever and whenever is that he is surrounded by love and he is getting the best care possible and not missing out on anything. He's been taken care of by people that love him and are making sure he has everything he needs, end quote. And you say, my friend Debbie?
I say she probably is correct in saying that no family member has ever been denied going in, because I can go in as long as I let Kim know and give her notice, plenty of notice.
Well, see, that's just weird right there.
Okay, so
but that's
right.
Weird. Wait, stop, Debbie. That's weird.
Exactly.
That is totally
it
weird.
Is, it is.
You're his
it
daughter. Why do you have to give notice?
Well, first of all, at the old facility that he was in, we weren't even on the list. None of us kids were on the list. Only her three kids and their friends. Those were the only people on dad's list. What does that tell you?
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. I mean, there is no argument
so
here that makes any rational
sense. They're trying
sense.
To protect his privacy, but yet I've seen people come in there and bring whoever they want in there with them because they're on the list. So whoever they come in with is fine. Even though dad might not even know them for Adam, they're allowed to bring whoever they want in. And now I have an issue with that. You think that I'm really going to want to bring people in just to gawk at my father who has Alzheimer's? Are you kidding me?
Right.
No,
right.
Of course not. But I will allow someone to come with me that I know dad might have a twinkle in his eye if he sees them, because he actually had a relationship with them and knew them all those years. It's long-term memory. It's somebody that he's known for way back in the day. Those are the people he's going to remember if he still can remember. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And that's what I want. I want reactions from my dad. I want to engage him. I want to keep him out in the real world as long as I can. I don't want him going into himself, and that is my mission when I go to see my dad. I'm up and dragging him outside and making him walk, and I'm not leaving him sitting in a chair or laying in his bed. I want him engaged in the world while he is still on the face of this earth. So when Ashley says nobody's been denied, okay, well, I was denied. I probably 5-6 months I couldn't go see my dad, and then then my mom's in the hospital dying, and I'm there in April, and dad's birthday's the next day, and if I don't sign, I'm not seeing my dad. And then she's telling everybody he's on his deathbed, well, then he might die before I see him ever again. And so when you're in there deliberating all those hours for mediation, of course, at the end of the day, you're going to sign the paperwork, because I'm not leaving Nashville without seeing my dad, and I'll do anything I can to see my dad, you know, and that's what happened.
So you signed papers and the right,
came in.
Right. But you just kind of gave in.
That's where I gave in, because here's my mom dying. My mom is not going to come out of the hospital. She's dying. She's laying on her deathbed. And here my dad is possibly laying on his deathbed, because I don't know. That's all I hear out in the media from Kim. But yet I don't know, because I haven't seen him for 5 or 6 months.
So let's get to this, Debbie. Let me understand this. So now the Campbell-Falk bill is passed in Tennessee with the help of Senator Crow, who's going to be on the show. And now that seemingly gives you the right to see your dad when you want to see your dad.
And bring mail to him. And I opened a P.O. box in Nashville for dad when I found out where he was. So when I would go in, and Kevin Lemons, who is a fan of dad's, has been since he was 7 years old, and he's in his 50s now. He would go and see dad twice a week and bring the mail if I couldn't get in. And dad loved, you know, that's something he's done his whole life, is read his fan mail and sometimes answer it back. You're supposed to be consistent with Alzheimer's patients. You keep them doing things that they've known their whole life, you know, and he loves reading. In fact, just the other day when I was in, he still tries to read my visitor pass that I have on. He's always reading and looking at words and trying to make words out. And so the Campbell-Falk bill now says I can bring mail in, and he can have phone calls if he wants. If I want to Skype with one of my grandkids or his great-grandkids, he can. But unfortunately, I'm still not allowed to bring anything in.
So here's the deal. Is it my understanding that you went to visit him in a couple of weeks ago and had a difficulty?
I did. I didn't do my 7 days in advance, because I thought, you know what? Now the bill has passed. I was under the impression that once the law passed, any court cases are null and void.
And?
Well, obviously I am mistaken, because when I showed up, I was told you can't visit your dad. You didn't go through Kim. You know, I said to the law, I said, you've read the law, the new law that governor has passed. They go, yeah, we're still trying to distinguish it. And I go, well, it's 11:10 right now, and I have till 2 o'clock to see my dad, because I had to fly. I was working. I'm on an overnight. So what I do is I bid Nashville overnight. So now I'm on an overnight. My hotel's paid for. I just have to either rent a car or Uber it to and from the facility and to the airport, you know, and that's what I do. And I said, and you are now cutting my time out with my dad. I'm not leaving here. I want to see my dad. They go, well, you can't. Kim said, you can't. It's not a good day to visit your dad because you didn't give her notice. I said, okay, well, the new law says I can. And the only other option I have is to bring a lawsuit against the facility, which I definitely don't want to have to do. And so they went and conferred a little bit longer, and then they came out and told me that I could see him.
So I'm on the outside.
So
looking
we're right
in
back at step one.
For the moment,
you know,
until moment until they review all of this. Yeah. But I would say to you this, here's where I'm sitting. I'm sitting outside and I'm looking in. And unless you're a murderer,
unless I've done bodily harm to my father,
or you're bringing a camera in that you're going to sell some story to people or wherever.
Which I've never done. And I have made the mistake once, but I was so angry, Holly. She was telling everybody dad was on his deathbed. He couldn't talk. He couldn't play the guitar anymore. He couldn't do this. He couldn't do that. And I had videoed it, because I used to video dad when we were just me and him. You can't, you know, it's against the law to videotape in a facility. I got that. But if I'm in the privacy of just me and dad and nobody else is in the video or picture or anything, then it's okay. And I would video mine and dad's visits, because I wanted to see how the progression was of his disease. And I would take pictures of our visits and everything. Well, I had a video of dad playing the guitar, and it was awesome. And I gave it to Inside Edition, because I was so angry that she's telling the world that my dad is on his deathbed. And here he is. He can perfectly play his guitar. Awesome. And I mean, I just don't get it.
Right. No,
what is the benefit of doing that? You know,
what I would say to
never you. Never sold it or anything.
What I would say to you is the fact that she or anybody in her position would stop a child or insist a child take 7 days of notice. This to me is cruelty. This is cruel.
Oh, it is cruel.
This is cruel.
One time I picked up a trip. There was one in open time. I go, oh, great. There's a Nashville. I'll get that. And so I texted her. I said, Kim, this just came up. It's a Nashville overnight. And so I want to see dad. She goes, now, Debbie, you know, you're supposed to give me 7 days notice. And this is only 6. You're supposed to give me 7. I'll let it go this time, but don't let it happen again.
Jeez.
Please.
Yeah, right.
Really? Please.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Listen,
you know, my show, my opinion, I've researched this thing. It looks crazy as all hell to me. and this is a story that needs to get out there. You did
the problem is I don't think the judge knows the history of me and my dad. You know, maybe I need to write him a long letter.
Well, you know, judges are in
I'm
horrible.
Just a psycho kid,
yeah.
kid from one of the marriages, trying to get his money, blah 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 blah, whatever.
No,
they don't understand. This is my dad. This is my best friend. This isn't Glenn Campbell to me. This is my dad.
I'm going to say to you, what in the world, if your father was 100% aware, would he be thinking about all of
this right now? Oh my gosh.
He would be beside himself.
Yeah.
Beside himself. That's clear. That's obvious.
Trust me. Have I been kicking myself in the rear going coulda, shoulda, woulda many years ago? Oh my gosh. You bet. Well, you betcha.
Coulda, shoulda, woulda what?
Would I have let dad know everything that was in my head? Absolutely. You betcha.
Oh God. I mean, when you say coulda, shoulda, woulda, what do you mean by that? I'm a little confused. What do you mean?
I mean, I tell my dad just anything that was in my heart.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah.
Things I would have said.
Oh, the chance to say the proper...
Yeah.
That's got to be really, really hard. Yeah. Your other siblings, though, not Kim's three, but the others, there are, what, 8 kids altogether?
Correct.
I know Travis has talked to me. Where are the others on this? Do you know?
You know, I really don't know. I really do not know.
Right. So the thing about it is the bottom line.
Hallie, I've given up being the tour director.
I hear you. I know. I get
sense?
That kid. No,
you
I
know,
do.
I would
sure.
love to. I would love to hold everybody together because I'm the oldest. But some things you just can't do. You know.
So I'm going to ask you something that's a hard question to ask, but I want to ask it because I want to ask it in terms of everything that we've talked about, everything that's obvious to anybody who's got a brain that this is a very wrong situation. If you had it to do over again, is there anything you would have done differently? Is there anything that you wish you could fix in all of this? Is there anything you wish
that
you, as far as so that the situation wouldn't have escalated to where it is today? You know, we all have our shtick, kiddo. You know, I told you the story about mine.
You mean as far as what's going on with Kim and I and the
whole mess
and all that?
And the mess.
I would have had it open and not sealed.
God, you're
That's
great.
That's definitely one thing. You know, I had the lawsuit sealed because it was protection of dad of where he was. Because it's a public, when you have something unsealed, it becomes a public, people can see addresses and everything. And this was about protecting dad. That's why we had it sealed.
So what
I know, I would have had it unsealed because then the world really would know what was going on instead of Travis and I looking like we're money hungers. In fact, when we initiated the lawsuit, Hallie, they said, okay, well, so you guys are going to try to be conservators and take over the financial. And I go, no, halt. I'm not signing anything. I want nothing to do with finances. This is not about money. I want somebody else to take over finances so that the money is not ran through so that my dad is taken care of for as long as he has left on this earth. And there is money to care for him. That's why we want the finances looked over. And conservatorship, I just wanted to be able to have a say in what my dad's care and what was going on with him and knowing what was going on with him. And still to this day, I have no absolutely nothing. I don't know what drugs they have my dad on. I don't know anything. They won't tell me anything. I just get to go and see him and sit with him for the 4 hours and hold his hand and make him smile and laugh and then, you know, leave.
So listen to me. You saw him the other day. Tell us how he's really doing.
It was such a great visit. Oh my gosh. Yeah. We went outside. We walked a couple times around the facility. You know, I get him trying to get him walking laps, you know, because all he does is eat a lot. He's very healthy, very healthy appetite.
He just turned 80, right?
He just turned 80.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
How did he get to 80?
I know. And he still looks handsome as ever. He's so comical, you know. I mean, he's still there.
Does
My
he sing?
Still there.
If you sing to him, does he sing?
Yes. It's really funny. They were singing when I got there. Dad gets up late. He's still got those musician hours.
Right.
You know? So usually when I come in, he's eating all by himself because everybody's already 8 hours ago. And they were having a sing-along with all the residents. And, of course, Dad had no part of it. So now they're not singing anymore. The sing-along's done, and now he's singing.
Oh my God.
So now he just starts singing, you know. It was really funny.
Does he have a guitar?
Yes, he does have a guitar in there, but I haven't seen him pick it up in a while.
Wow. Amazing. Amazing.
Yeah. But we just enjoy each other's company and laugh and, you know.
You know,
I love you.
You know, I love you. You know, I think you're a very special lady.
So
you know, that's true. And I say to you this, my friend, I say, oh my God, I only wish for everybody peace in all of this because this is just vicious
and
cruel.
I have tried. I guess
I know you have.
So meant to be.
Well, it is what it is, and there's not a whole lot you can do about it. I admire the fact that you guys.
And I'm at peace with that. I'm at peace with that, Hallie. I'm okay.
And you fought for him, and that's all that you can do in the role that you have. And the legislation is there, and the legislation will come to pass, and maybe things will change and be different. But you know, you're in a remarkable position to help other people who have this thing going on, who don't have famous
dads.
Just
never give up. That's what I would say to somebody. Don't ever give up. if that is your journey, don't ever give up. And this is my dad, you know, I mean, I love him and unconditionally. And the caregivers are very lucky I don't live in Nashville. They'd be really sick of me. I couldn't imagine living there and not seeing him every day. You know, I just couldn't.
You're very brave, my friend. You're very brave. But I want to ask you this. In the confines of your own home, in a quiet moment, are you as brave or are you tearful? What?
I'm tearful right now. I'm a pretty strong old broad. I got to tell you, I'm pretty hard to break.
Yeah.
And when I believe in something, I'm as loyal as they come. But once you break me, forget about it. But I'm pretty strong. But this whole journey has sure put a big awakening in my life as far as life and where it takes you. I think my hardest thing with Dad is that I look at this life that he's had. You know, he's had this, oh my gosh, huge, over-the-top, wonderful life, has affected so many people, given so much to so many people. And this is how his life ends. You know, it really puts mine into perspective. So you can believe that I'm going to be living every day like it's my last after seeing what my dad's gone through. Most definitely.
A defining voice of country music and a modern day legend, country music star Tanya Tucker inspired many female artists who still top the charts today. From the signature classic songs to the unforgettable sass and soul of her voice, Tucker has paved a path in country music and beyond through an unprecedented level of success. Her debut single, Delta Dawn, at age 13, earned young Tanya a Grammy nomination for Best Female Country Vocal Performance. In 1972, she earned the Top New Female Vocalist Award by the Academy of Country Music. And that was just the beginning. New albums propelled Tucker to become one of the best-selling female artists in country music, and with the 1994 Super Bowl halftime appearance, was a household name to stay. Still, it's her storied romance with Glen Campbell that we want to talk about today. Tanya Tucker knew Glen Campbell both musically and romantically, as no one else ever could. Okay, Miss Tanya Tucker, what a voice. What a career.
Thank you.
You're quite welcome. What a life story you have, lady. You have seen it all. You have done it all. You have survived it all. You are my kind of woman. So.
Oh, thank you.
That is the truth. So all of that being said, what I want to talk to you about today is Mr. Glen Campbell, of course. And I suspect you knew him in a way that no one else ever could. A little different than other people
Absolutely.
Did. So I know you had said publicly that it was a love that never could be again. Here's what I want to say. I don't know if you can separate out the music from the man. I want you to give us insight. Music, heart, talk to me in terms of who Glen Campbell is on that level.
Well, Glen, you know, and I were raised, I mean, he was raised in pure poverty. I mean, that's where his beginnings were. Of course, I didn't have the poverty that he had at such a young age, and, you know, in the cotton fields and all that. But, you know, I had meager beginnings, and my family wasn't rich by any means. But Glen, you know, he and I were a lot alike. We had a lot of the same taste. Of course, music was our big connection. I mean, that was always the thing that really connected us so much with music. I mean, we just loved singing together. We sounded great together. We could harmonize and just about on anything. So we really, really connected on a musical level. But we also connected on a personal level because we had similar family background, family first. And, of course, he comes from a large family. I'm only, you know, three kids in my family, me and my brother and my sister, and me being the youngest. But Glen was the kind of guy that, you know, I always wanted to go back to Denver City where my grandmother lived. So he took me and we went in the Learjet and landed there in Hobbs, New Mexico, and then drove over to Denver City. And my grandmother was living in a real small little trailer. And I said, God, it would be so great to get her, you know, a new stove and new refrigerator. And I'll be dang if it wasn't the next week. My grandmother had all that from he'd ordered everything for her. And he was one of the most giving people that I've ever known. I love that about him because he was giving to a fault. I mean, he really was. I've never seen him turn down an autograph. He always treated his fans with integrity and caring. He was very caring.
So here's my point.
You know,
what I was going to say to you was, So this is a man who loves family, who loves people.
He did. He loves people, loved family. It was also like we'd go down to Delight one Christmas. We went down and spend Christmas with his family, all of his brothers and sisters and his mother and dad. And, of course, I went and got a Christmas tree. And then later that evening, we all went to the nursing home. And, of course, the Campbells, they all sang. All the brothers and sisters, mother and dad, they all sang. Everybody had a voice. And so we would go down to the nursing home and sing for the people there. I always remember that so well.
How ironic.
He was such a giving person and loving and just, I mean, he'd been through a lot. At that time, he was just separated and he divorced his third wife, Sarah. And that was when I came into the picture. And at the time, he had walking pneumonia. So, he wasn't really leaving the house much. But me and my mother would go over and take some homemade potato soup and kind of nursed him back to health.
You're lucky to have you.
But he had always a good relationship with my parents. My dad could very much relate to him and how, he started out and is poorer because my dad was that way too, below poverty level.
So here's what you're describing to me. You're describing a man who has an incredibly large heart.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Definitely. There is no doubt about it. He was so giving to me, too. I turned down more things than he would give me. I said, no. Because, I was always, he said, you're the only girl that's ever bought me anything with her own money.
That's cute. That's great.
That's the way it's always going to be.
I love it. So here he is now with this Alzheimer's disease. Here's what I want to talk to you about. This is what I want to understand. I would like to know that if he knew what was going on with all of the family, with Kim not letting his older children see their daddy, what, in your opinion, knowing him as you do, knowing the kind of man he was, what would he be thinking?
Well, I can't imagine him even allowing it. I mean, I just can't imagine that. And Glenn, he's always been a people person. He loved playing guitar and hanging with friends. And to me, that's very important for him to have that and for him to not have any of those kind of connections anymore and totally be isolated. He wouldn't allow it. He just wouldn't.
I of course have now interviewed Debbie and Travis and everybody surrounding this thing, and I have done a lot of research on it. The kids have taken a real beating in the press. Tanya, terrible.
Yes.
They're after the money. Oh, they're after this. Oh, they're after that. That is not my experience with them. And if I think I know people a little bit, it's what I do for a living is talk to people.
Yes.
Right? So what's your take? What do you think this is about going on here?
Well, I'll have to say, I know all of Glenn's older kids, and I've met his younger ones as well. I think the only one I really haven't met is Dylan, who is Sarah Davis Campbell's son, and Glenn. But Debbie is the one that I know the most, and she's the oldest. So we've had a relationship from the time that Glenn and I were dating. We'd speak on the phone, or I would see her from time to time. But we have developed a really strong friendship over the last few years, and I think she was just at her wit's end, with this whole thing going on. And so heartbroken. She just wants to see her dad.
Right.
It's not about the money. It's about seeing the one she loves and spent 25 years with on the road. When Kim was home redecorating houses, Debbie was out with Glenn working on the road. So they had an incredible relationship, very close and very tight. And I think that it's just a crime to not allow his oldest daughter to come in and see her own daddy. I mean, I know that if I was in that position, they'd have hell to pay with me because, I can't imagine. Really, I can't even fathom for, 67 years. So I always had the same mom and the same daddy.
Right.
My parents stayed together. But, in these kind of situations, a child is a child. And if there was a problem with a relationship before Glenn got sick, maybe I could understand it. But especially when I'm speaking of Debbie, because I'm the closest to her. And I know the money is nothing. It's nothing. She wants to be and see her daddy in his last years anytime she wants. And she should be able to do that without being monitored or, without being kept from taking her phone inside with him to take pictures with him. His younger kids are free to do that. So why aren't his older children, able to do that? I can't believe that these kind of laws exist, that someone has that kind of power.
Absolutely, over children. No question about it. But, this is interesting to me because then I heard that you tried to see him and you were denied the right to see him.
Oh, yeah. I've never been allowed to see him. I mean, I really didn't have much faith in that happening. But then I turned it around and I think, well, what if it was me? If I was Kim and she was me, I have to tell you, I would have no problem with that, because it's been 30 years. Come on, let's get over this, you know. You know, it's the kind of thing that the public has not forgotten, Glenn and I. I mean, I feel constantly, and I hear comments up to me all the time. They thought we were married.
Right, right.
And some people think he's the father of my kids.
Right.
So it's kind of crazy that way. But, you know, I would have no problem with that, and I don't understand why she would have a problem with it. But if she's not going to allow his own daughter to see him, then I don't have much faith in her letting me see him either.
So let me say this to you. Right, absolutely. You know, I've learned in working on this story that when someone is diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease, that the entire family and circle of friends, it's their diagnosis too. I mean, the victim
absolutely
might not get the closure. We'll never know what they do or do not know, you know, with Glenn for sure.
Right.
But for those that love the victim, like you, it seems to me that there has to be that closure just for you, a chance to say goodbye.
Oh, exactly. I mean, I'm trying to write a song called Just Let Me Say Goodbye One Last Time. And that really, in the closure, is that's it. I mean, I was lucky, and I probably shouldn't be saying this, but at one time when Debbie was, and I guess Travis was with her, but they went into see Glenn, and at that time were allowed to take their phones in and FaceTime me. And Glenn saw my face on the phone and just looking at me, and I said, Glenn, remember Tanya? We used to be in love, and I sang him Little Dream Lover. Where are you? And just going on and just trying to jog his memory. And when I got done talking, he kissed the phone. So that may be all I ever get, you know? And if that's it, then I'll hang on to that. That'll be what I hang on to for the rest of my life anyway.
Right.
Because I feel like he knew.
So I know that I've spoken to doctors about that, and they say one of the great things is to keep the people who were close to him and who loved him around, not just Glenn, but around any Alzheimer's victim, because it helps
absolutely
them. It gives them they may not respond, but, you know, they're sure that it gives them a sense of where they are, something. Loretta Lynn also, didn't Loretta try and get in to see him recently? And that too?
Loretta's been wanting to go see him. I talked to her, and of course she can't believe I'm not able to go in and see him. You know, she just can't believe that. I don't understand it, but I learned to kind of just deal with it. But someone like Loretta should be able to go in and say hello to her friend.
Right, that's
and,
it.
And they go way back, even before I was involved. To me, that's what I would want for my parents if they had Alzheimer's. I would want all the family and the friends I could get to come around so he's not alone. I hate the fact that he is so alone now, and he's brought so much joy to so many millions of people. There's no reason why he shouldn't have some connection. And staring at the walls of a nursing home is just not my idea of that connection.
Right, absolutely. Listen, I heard very wonderful things about you. Not just, we all know how wonderful you are. We know how brilliantly talented you are. But here is what you did. You've been very good to Glenn Campbell. He should only know, because you have been so supportive of these kids. You were supportive of them, and you worked with Rusty Crowe, Senator from Tennessee, to help them get the Campbell-Falk bill passed. So I want to applaud you for that, because that hopefully is going to change and what have you. Now, I talked this to Rusty, so I want to tell you what Rusty, you'll hear it when you hear the show, but I want you to know. But
yeah,
he talked to me about the song Forever Loving You and actually sent it to me. You do such a dynamic job on that song that I can't.
Oh, thank you.
I am telling you, my office was insane. Do you hear me?
Oh.
So the last line, well, it's an important thing that you're doing. The last line of the song, the last words you sing in Forever Loving You is, I love you, Glenn. Is that something that you wish that you could say to him face to face, not on FaceTime?
I do. And, you know, I felt like I was saying it to him then. He just wasn't in the room. But I was definitely speaking right to him. And the song is every word is how I feel. And I just felt like it was sort of my way of having closure, you know, of saying goodbye, but also reminding everyone and everyone in the world, whoever would listen to the song or whoever hears it will know how I feel about him. And that will never change. I mean, sure, we broke up. We went through all that. He said a few things about me that maybe weren't so good. I might have said a few things in the heat of the moment, in the heat of the time. But really, you know, love is love. And I never stopped loving him. In fact, before he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, you know, I said, I just want to thank Kim for taking care of him for so many years. A person that I cared for, that she took care of. But then I find out a different story later on, because I have no ill will against her. Right. But when someone does these things, I found myself in the middle of it. Really first started this whole process with Debbie. I just really wanted to support them and kind of be a kind of a silent supporter. But I guess I'm not silent, because I am a person that has some celebrity and some fame to speak of. So people are going to wanted to take it a little different. So I found myself being involved more than I thought I would be. But it really started out just to support them. And then I find myself doing the song and speaking in the front of the Senate and then speaking to you and speaking to several people in the media. I've been very particular about who I've talked to about it, though, because it is a very, very, it's a kind of a sticky situation. But when you look at it black and white, it's just dead ass wrong. It's just wrong. So we got to stand up for things that you believe are wrong. That's just the way it is. That's the American way. And somebody's got to stand up and say something. And I'm hoping that a lot of other states will follow on this Glenn Campbell bill, because it's the way it should be.
What's happening in this family, because they're famous, because there's, you know, a lot of money, whatever involved, it gets a lot of ink. But the reality of it is, it happens to families all over America every day, all the time, which is why I thought this is such an important story to get out. I know personally people that this is happening to, and they don't come from, you know, the Campbell family or have
exactly
the fame. So I think it's a really important thing. One last thing. You know, I saw a video of you and Glenn. God, you guys were adorable together. You really were.
Thank you.
It's an interview with Tom Snyder. For sure. It was an interview with Tom Snyder, who's one of my heroes, and you were talking about harmony.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you started off in the beginning of this interview talking about brilliant harmony you and he could make together, because you did. And Glenn taught you the art of harmony. And he talked about how extraordinary it was to sing with you because your voices were so harmonious. Ironic, right?
So he was always my biggest fan.
Yeah.
He liked me more than I liked me. As far as my voice, he was just the biggest fan. And he said I was one of the best phrasers of any music. I just like Sinatra.
Yeah.
Sinatra was one of his favorite. But I am just big a fan of his. There'll never be anybody better.
So here's my point about this harmony thing, okay? So let's take it out a little further. Let's get metaphorical about it. Let's write a song about harmony, okay?
Yeah.
Because here's what I want to say to you. I want to say what you've been witness to was learning that the man you love in a way that never could be again is in the throes of a long goodbye. To Kim Campbell, to the family, what do you say? What do you wish for all of them? You've got the floor. It's yours. Take it.
You know, I wish for them, of course, all the luck and love in the world. I wish them the best. But I just really, my great wish is that Kim would relax on this and really understand the other side of the coin here and how important it is for him to see his kids, no matter which wife it was, no matter who had them, they're his children and they should be able to see their dad. And I just would hope that she would find it in her heart to recognize this and be the Christian she says that she is. I just don't think it's very Christian-like, these things that she's doing. And I would hope that she would find a little compassion in her heart and we could stop all this. And of course she wants to protect her three children. I understand that. But Glenn has nine kids. So, you know, there's a lot of people here that are in dire straits and they're running out of time for his children. And there's not a lot of time left. And I would just hope he would be compassionate. That's my prayer. That he would be able to be with his friends and be with his old friends. He used to come and play a dick with him and play a little putt-putt golf inside the home. And my wish would be that he would be at home with 24-hour care. That's where he'd be if I was. He wouldn't be in a nursing home. I guarantee you, he would have all the care just like my mother had before she passed. She had all the care at home and all of us around her when she passed.
After learning his fate, Glenn Campbell wrote one last song, I'm Not Going to Miss You. He wrote, I'm still here, but yet I'm gone. I don't play guitar or sing my songs. They never defined who I am, the man that loves you till the end. I want to thank my guests today, Travis Campbell, Debbie Campbell-Cloyd, and the great Tanya Tucker. I also want to thank Glenn Campbell for his years of contribution to millions of people's enjoyment. This show would not have been possible without a host of people. I especially want to thank publicist Donna Nolan Wilson for all of her hard work. We leave you with Tanya Tucker and Senator Rusty Crowe's song, Forever Loving You, dedicated to Mr. Glenn Campbell. Be sure to check out HallieCasserJane.com for information about part two of our Alzheimer's special, when Catherine Falk, the daughter of the late actor Peter Falk, Tennessee Senator Rusty Crowe, Patty Davis, the daughter of President Ronald Reagan and First Lady Nancy Reagan, join the conversation. Thank you for tuning in today. I am Hallie Kasser Jane.
If I could spend just one more minute with you before you have to go, If I could see you one more time before you have to leave this world. If I could hold you in my arms tonight, just like we used to do, I could leave this world a happy girl, forever loving you. If I'd have loved you like you were all that mattered in this old world to me, if I could turn back the hands of time, God, if I only could. If I could go back now and change my life and make it up to you, I could slip away for all eternity, forever loving you. If I could find a way to go back now and let you take my hand, if I could find a way to touch your heart and make you understand. I don't know why it has to be this way, but there's nothing I can do. So I'll go on living, forever loving you. I never stop loving you, even after all these years. I still feel you next to me at night when you're not here. Oh, how your sweet songs stay with me even after all this time. Your memory's right here in my heart, forever on my mind. If I could find a way to go back now and let you